Blog Talk Radio.
Frank McCarthy's executive search work spans some 40 years. He has personally placed countless professionals on their jobs throughout New England and beyond, and he keeps on going. I sat down and talked with Frank about what trends he sees for job hunters, where the industry is headed, and how his background as a former Catholic priest shaped his career success. We'll also share with you five ways to maximize your conference experience as we gear up for next week's November 2nd Multicultural Conference. You'll want to take some notes, get out a pen, paper, or iPad, and let's get you ready for your next conference, convention, symposium, or executive retreat. Hi, this is Carol Copeland-Thomas, and you're listening to Focus on Empowerment. Hi, my friends. Thanks so much for joining us. This is Carol Copeland-Thomas. We are glad that you're listening live and those who are listening to our broadcast after we air this podcast in the coming days ahead. It's a busy season. It's quite active here in the greater Boston area. We certainly are gearing up for next week's November 2nd Multicultural Conference, exactly 7 days from today. So we're doing lots of things in addition to our regular business activities. And I would encourage you, too, to go to my website, carolcopelandthomas.com, because it is also Global Diversity Awareness Month that I created some years ago. So we are doing a video every day. Every day this month, there is a video. And if you click on the homepage, you'll see the Global Diversity Awareness Month section. You can click through, download the guideline, the guidebook that is there for you that can be used any time of year, and watch all the videos on a number of different topics all related to global diversity. So we'll talk more about that in the weeks to come, because that particular guide and that page can be used again anytime. October happens to be the month that we designated for it, but it has applications and use throughout. When we look at what's taking place with the Harvey Weinstein situation and sexual harassment, we do a video on that. So again, I think you'll find great use and purposes for your organizations and just for your own educational knowledge base as well. I did this interview a few hours ago, actually yesterday, with Frank McCarthy. I'm so excited about the work he continues to do. He is so spry, so insightful, and has helped so many people. So we're going to get right into the interview I had with Frank McCarthy, then come back and give you the five ways to maximize your own conference experience whenever that happens to take place. Hang on and listen to my interview with Frank McCarthy. He's an old friend. He is a colleague. He is a veteran in the search business as it relates to diversity and placing minority professionals on jobs in the greater Boston area and beyond. I've known him a number of years, and I said, let me bring him on the show to interview him so that he can share with us his story and what's going on now in the industry. Frank McCarthy, thank you so much for being a guest on my show.
It's a pleasure, very much a pleasure.
What do you think the industry is now when it, as it relates to diversity, as it relates to the search industry and the work that you've been doing for well over 40 years? What's your insight on that now?
I think the search industry, the retained search industry, is here to stay. There's some differences in it now. The contingency firms, I think, are going to have trouble over the next 10 years. I think the diversity, the whole diversity piece, it's kind of fallen asleep. You know, it's amazing. I think the only companies that are really wide awake with diversity are the banks, the insurance companies, mm-hmm. hospitals. But hospitals are having a tough time finding diversity people. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it's as active as it was 10 years ago. I really mm-hmm. don't.
Do you think that, I look at these high-profile sexual harassment cases that remind us that diversity is very much in play in terms of its importance. When you look at some of the issues that
companies face and organizations face, do you think that there is an increased need for professionals like you and others to find really credible individuals, minorities who are working in companies to help sort of turn the tables on some of the tough diversity issues that companies face these days?
I think you're absolutely on target as far as companies face diversity problems. But a lot of companies really feel that if they get one or two people of color or people of diversity, that's it. And they don't have to, they really don't have to spread and have a lot of diversity people on staff. One of the things that I found out recently, I started working on boards of directors. Amazing how the needs on boards of directors are white women, people of color, and that's it. But if you look at just if you just want to get an idea of what the boards of directors are like, just flip a few boards on LinkedIn and see the lack of diversity. It's unbelievable. As far as the insurance companies, the companies that deal with the public, they're still hot for diversity. One of the banks in Boston, one of the major banks, has 18 people who just do sourcing for diversity. They just build list databases of candidates, mm-hmm. and then they turn them over to their HR people to go recruiting. Mm-hmm. That's going to happen more and more. People bringing it inside. When this whole business of sourcing, we started that years ago, probably in the 70s. And I went to a meeting that there's a new group that has all the sourcing people attend the meetings. And there were 200 at this meeting. And when they asked that, when the fellow who started the meeting, the MC started the meeting, he asked all those who are doing sourcing for companies stand up. And I bet well over 100 people stood up.
Wow.
So companies are bringing a lot of this inside. State Street has a real good friend of mine, is the vice president of the diversity group. And he has 18 people who do diversity sourcing all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
So it's active, but you have to dig at it. You know, in Boston, there are not many people, not many companies in the search business who focus on diversity.
That's interesting that you would say that there is now internal staffing that is handling the kind of work that companies like yours historically have done. And I think you hit a good point, Frank. When I look at diversity, I look at many people inside of companies that are internally taking care of their diversity needs from a training point of view, development as well. But to me, there's still such a need for individuals like us with our businesses because we specialize in these particular areas. And speaking of that, Frank, what are your thoughts about the big online boards, the places where people can go, upload their resumes, and in hopes for jobs?
Well, they do a lot. They do a lot of that. But the best way to get the good answer on that is to talk to some people who have done it. A lot of them just feel that, boy, it just goes on and on, and it could become expensive. Some people do it just to get the networking done, and then they're kind of lazy. They don't want to do their own networking, mm-hmm. and that happens with these. But I'm not very familiar with them. And when I say that diversity with the banks, and they're bringing a lot of it inside, but it's not universal. I mean, there's still need for people like us that do diversity.
Right.
It's a hard sell sometimes with some companies.
Yeah.
They say, and the excuse is, well, we'd really like to hire diversity people, but they're not out there. And that's just not true.
True. That's so true. You know, you've been at this a long time. Take us way back and tell us how you got started in your business.
Well, I have a very different background. I'm from Medford, Massachusetts. Went into the Catholic seminary and was ordained a priest in 1956. Cardinal Cushing, in those days in Boston, asked for volunteers to go to dioceses where they were the shortage of priests. So I volunteered. Five of us volunteered. One went to Baker City, Oregon, Yakima, Washington, Cheyenne, Wyoming. And then when I went in to see the Cushing, he said, "Do you want to be a cowboy too?" And I said, no, I want to work in a big city with poor people. He said, "Well, you can do that in Boston." I said, "Nah, not for 10 years. And he laughed. He says, "You're right, kid. Do you know anything about Paterson, New Jersey?" And I said, "No." He says, "Neither do I, but the bishop is a great guy and he needs priests. That's where you're going."
Wow.
So my first assignment was Passaic, New Jersey. We had probably 3,500 families, three general hospitals, high school, grammar school. And there was another young priest and myself and the pastor. Mm-hmm. And the parish like that in Boston in those days would have had 6 or 8 priests. Mm-hmm. We worked like heck, but it was wonderful. And all the time I was in the seminary, I always, some of the guys that I grew up with, a couple were killed in Korea during the Korean War, and they used to write to me and say, "We're over here freezing, and so you can play hockey and football and have a good time."
Wow.
And it bothered me. So after I was in the parish 3 years, the bishop came down one day. The bishop was a New Jersey person and very much a Yankee fan, and I'm not. And we used to argue that all the time. And I said to him, "Can I come see you this week, Bishop?" He says, "Gee, Mac, don't tell me you're not happy." I said, "Oh, I love it here. It's the greatest place in the world. But I would like to go in the service. I'd like to volunteer for the service." He says, "Oh, no, you're too young." And he said, "In another 10 years, it'll be too late." He said, "What is it, too late?" And I said, "The guys that I knew well were all in the Marine Corps. And I, in my own thinking, I want to do them one better. I want to be a paratrooper."
Mm.
And he laughed and he said, "That's not a very spiritual reason. But give me a call during the week." And he let me go. So I went to Fort Benning, Georgia, got in the 2nd Infantry Division, went to jump school, was assigned to Korea. We got extended in Korea for 2 years. I came back to the 101st Airborne in Kentucky for a couple of years. And then was assigned to Japan, the Army headquarters in Japan. This was just before Vietnam was heating up.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a new bishop, and I asked if I could stay in the service, and he said, "No, you've been in 6 years, and it's time for you to get out." So I was not a happy camper, but I get out, and he had me assist in 2 very wealthy parishes where there was a problem. And he was just looking me over, and I was there for each one of those parishes for 3 months. And then he brought me in to see me one night, and he said, "I'm making you pastor of Our Lady of Lourdes in Patterson." And I was very young. I was only ordained maybe 9 years. In those days, you waited 20, 25 years. And I said, "Gee, that's wow." And he started laughing. He said, "Don't get a big head, boy. A dozen or so people turned it down."
Oh.
It's an Italian-Belgian parish in the black community, and it's black and Latino communities, and it's going to be the focal point of all the stuff that's going on in Patterson.
Mm-hmm.
And it was. It was just like being launched into a different country. Everything was there. Hurricane Reuben Carter was one of the guys that I knew well, fighter. And it was just the place to be. It was morning, noon, and night, racial stuff, but it was wonderful. It was a wonderful place to be.
Well, he sent the right person, clearly. You had the heart and the spirit to be in that transitional neighborhood during that time. And I think it's sort of seeded where the work that you've been doing all these years.
Yeah, it had a lot to do. When I first left, I took a leave of absence from the priesthood, came home to Boston, taught at Dorchester High for a while, was amazed at in those days, this is in 1968, 1969, somewhere around that time, there were 1,700 kids, 700 were kids of color, and not one diverse teacher at all.
Wow.
And so they put me into guidance, and I get a lot involved in a lot of stuff, but they told me that I really wasn't the right person for the job, so don't plan on coming back next year. So I left, went to work for the federal government in Manhattan and the poverty programs, transferred to Boston. A year later, married, adopted 3 kids, worked with the federal government for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
As a GI, I was like, out of 200 workers, I was probably 3rd or 4th in seniority.
Mm-hmm.
And it would have been a nice life. But I really miss working in the black community, the Latino communities. So I said to my wife, I said, "You know, Jenny, I'd like to start my own business." And she said, "Go ahead, I'm used to being poor." So I started a company called Xavier Associates and did that from 1972 to 1999, sold the company to Gaddy Associates, had a 3-year non-compete. And then after 3 years, I said to Jenny, I'd like to do this again. She said, "Go ahead, but as soon as you hire anybody, you're out of here." So I was just a sole practitioner, and I've been doing that for the last 10 more years now.
What,
and
what
I,
a,
it, Go ahead.
I was going to say, what a rich life. I mean, my goodness, you've gone from the priesthood to the military to urban journeys, and now entrepreneurship twice. Just people would just crave for that kind of adventure. It really is really an adventure, but you have done so much and you have placed so many people in different jobs of substance and meaning, all because of the heart and soul that you've always had as a professional and as one who wants to reach out to others. Just a great experience. Frank, tell us, how can people get in touch with you?
My telephone number at work is 508-350-0053. I'm located in East Bridgewater now. We lived in Brockton for years, and then one of our kids moved home, and we bought a house in East Bridgewater. She adopted two special need kids by herself and wasn't making it in New Jersey, so we moved home, and now we live in East Bridgewater. I miss Brockton like crazy. I was on the board of the health center there for 20 years. And but my office, I have my office in my home in East Bridgewater.
Yes.
Telephone number again is 508-350-0053. My email address is frank@diverseworkplace.com. And my internet is www.diverseworkplace.com.
Great. If you were to give some advice just in a minute or less, what would you tell someone who is out there looking for a new career? They have the skill sets. They are ready to go. They want to move to the next level. How would you advise them, Frank McCarthy?
I would advise them to find out what kind of a company they'd like to work for, what they have to offer, where their best results have been, and what kind of an environment, in a leadership position, on a staff position. And I tell them to look at the companies, build a character of the company. For example, if they're Latino, black, find out, you know, it's easy now with LinkedIn to find out the makeup of the company. It's amazing in this day and age, if you do that on LinkedIn, it's amazing how many companies are just solid white.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that just goes to show, but, Is diversity much in need? Yes, ma'am, it is. It's very much in need.
Well, you've just given, some more great advice, telling everybody to go to LinkedIn, doing your homework there. I know you're very active on LinkedIn. Frank McCarthy, you are a legacy. You are a jewel to so many of us, and just the wisdom and knowledge that many, many young professionals need of all colors, of all ethnicities. And I thank you and I salute you for the work that you continue to do. Frank McCarthy, thank you so much for being a guest on my show.
It's been a pleasure, and you're a very, very dear friend who's doing a lot of great work. Thank you.
Thank you.
Boy, a lot of wisdom there. I love Frank. He has so much to say. He's seen a lot, but yet he keeps up. Now, he's in his 80s, but yet he is probably one of the more active persons I've ever known to be on LinkedIn, and still does an awful lot of business engagement there. So we say salute to Frank McCarthy, and thank you so much for all that he's done in the years helping people to get established on their jobs and in their career paths.
You're listening to Focus on Empowerment by Carol Copeland Thomas.
So we're going to switch gears now and talk about the upcoming November 2nd Multicultural Conference, but expanded to really focus on any conferences, events, symposiums, conventions that you are going to be attending. And there are still tickets available, still registrations available for our conference. All the speakers have now been uploaded to the website. You can simply go to mssconnect.com. That's mssconnect.com. And to your heart's desire, see all of the activities that are going to take place on November 2nd, and you can register online as well. We'd like to have a full house there, and so there's going to be room for you to come to the November 2nd conference, all talking about women, work, and celebrating self-worth. Our keynote speaker, as you know, in the morning is going to be Ayanna Corbin, an HR business professional. We are flying her out from Mountain View, California. She works at Google. So we're going to have her as our very special guest in the morning, and then 20 other speakers, including our closing speaker, Dr.
Velda McCray-Yates, who is the executive director of HR over at Mass College of Art and Design, where we're going to be meeting. She will close us out, and bookend opening us up will be Ayanna Corbin and many dynamic speakers in between. So we want you there. We'd love for you to go, and we encourage you to register today. I'm going to give you five quick tips in our remaining segment. We won't be on the air next week. It's going to be quite busy going forward, but let's get this in so that you'll have some food for thought and some resources that you can work through as you are navigating, networking, and moving to your next career level. Number one is to organize your business cards. I talk about this all the time, and if you go to your favorite office supply store, pick up some, it's called, the only way I can describe it, they're clear plastic business card pouches. So I know that lots of you are online. I'm still a combination of being online and also having these physical business cards that are still very important, but you have to organize them. So as much as possible with being respectful of people's culture, because people treat business cards very differently. But what I suggest that when you get a free moment during the convention, before you leave that conference, mark down who this person is, whose card you have, and what action step do you need to take now that you have received the card. Maybe it's nothing. Maybe it's something. But then either at your respective conference or event, you can then put these cards into a plastic business card holder. Again, you can go to your office supply store and pick them up. I actually have one here. I go to Staples, and so it's called a clear business card pages, clear business card pages that you can get from any of the office supply stores. Then you can organize the business cards. I just picked up the three-ring binder that I use, and you can organize it and flip back and forth, date the card so that you know where and when you met the person. I've used business cards 5 years later that I've received, and the best way to do it is to get it and organize it and sort it and put it in that kind of case, a three-ring binder. These business card pages have hole punch, three-hole punch, so that they go easily into a three-ring binder. So that's point number one. Point number two is to review the speakers in advance. Review who is going to be speaking, where the sessions are going to be held, so that you have some sense of where you're going to go during your event. Now, typically, if you're going to a multi-day event, 3, 4, 5 day event, it's a lot easier to do that. You have to compress it when you're talking about doing this for a 1 day event. But again, you can go to my website, mssconnect.com, starting this afternoon. You'll see the whole roster. All the speakers are up there now, but the actual schedule of the events, you'll be able to click through and see the schedule so that you can map out. We have 8 different roundtables, and our participants will be able to go to 2 of the 8 roundtables so they can select where they want to go and not fumble and do that during the event itself. Same thing with a larger conference where you have multiple breakout sessions in different rooms, different parts of the hotels. I was at the National Black MBA Association and Pro-Spanica Conference in September at the Pennsylvania Convention Center. So, I mean, it was a huge complex. And again, it made sense to take out my directory and figure out where I was going in advance. So do that so that you can strategically network with people that typically you're not going to have access to. You'll have gatekeepers and reasons why you can't talk to them directly. But if you go to these conferences prepared, knowing where you want to go, then you can achieve the connections that you want to do and take care of. Number three is to go with a plan and a goal in mind. I don't go to any event totally cold. I always have some sense of why I'm going, who I want to meet, and what I want to accomplish. Now, maybe you want to pass out 10 business cards. That's all you want to do.
Figure out who do you want to give those cards to. Maybe they are decision makers who are at these events. Maybe they are support staff who can then pass on your business card to various individuals. Maybe they're competitors or colleagues who you want to collaborate with. But if your goal is to pass out 10 business cards, figure out who do you want to give them to. And also, I should say, this is like 3A or 1A, make sure you bring enough business cards with you to pass out. There's nothing more frustrating than you really have a great opportunity and you have run out of business cards. So make sure you have enough that you can take with you. You can get them made very inexpensively from all these sources online or different stores. So the cost shouldn't be a problem now, and you can also have them made up very inexpensively. I would tend not to make up your own business cards unless you're just brand new in business and there is no time for you to get business cards made up. Then that's your last resort because you just tell the difference. You can definitely tell the difference. So if at all possible, have your cards professionally made. You can get them done for $20, for $10, for $50, for a couple hundred. It doesn't cost that much money. Number four is make sure that you follow up. I could say this over and over and over again because this is the downfall of most people. This is the downfall of people on the inside, the decision makers. The follow-up is the key. So I suggest before you leave the building, build in time, and think about this going forward. Build in a couple of hours up to a full day conference where you can physically sit in that space or nearby or in your hotel room or at the airport or wherever you're going to go back to your respective home and figure out what your game plan is going to be. When are you going to call these individuals? What are you going to say? How are you going to stagger it? What do you need to do in terms of resources? Do you need to look up information about their companies and their organizations? What do you need to do so that your follow-up phone calls and emails will have value? That is the most important thing. And I'm sure going forward we're going to do a whole show on follow-up. It is that important. And then number five is consider writing an article, a blog post, or something written or a video commentary or a video blog that talks about the conference you have attended. Maybe it's one session that just was a wow, it gave you the wow factor. Somebody you met where you were so impressed with their background, what they've done, and you're looking forward to building a relationship with them. Whatever it happens to be, I'm sure that if you go to these meetings and these conferences, there's got to be one person, one idea, one suggestion, one obstacle that people have overcome that you could then talk about and share with others with an article, blog post, and leveraging that event. So, in closing, five ways to maximize your next conference experience. Number one, organize your business cards and make sure you have enough on hand the day of the event. Number two is to review the speakers and the program in advance of you going to the event so that you'll know what your game plan will be. Number three, make sure you have a plan or a goal in mind if it's just passing out 10 business cards strategically. Number four, follow up, follow up, follow up. And number five, blog, write an article, talk about in some documentable way, video, you can video a person, your experience at that conference or symposium so that you can leverage it. You can master it, and it can be a great platform for new opportunities for you. Thanks so much for listening today, and we hope that you will have great success going forward. Remember, empowerment begins when you believe in yourself. We will talk to you soon. Take care.